Hi, it's great to be here. I know I don't have too much time, so I'm not going to do too many preliminaries. I called this presentation Equity from the Start because that is the chapter title in the report of the International Commission on Social Determinants of Health that the WHO sponsored, that is all about the importance of the early years as a lifelong determinant of health, well-being, learning, and behavior. And that report, which hopefully will raise the profile of early child development and the role of education for all as a global determinant of health, is gradually making its way through the international system and is coming up at the World Health Assembly in May for the 194 countries that are members of the WHO to debate and agree on. And I want to approach this from the perspective of what we as the Global Knowledge Hub in Early Child Development had to say to the Commission that is relevant to the subject of this conference. The WHO Commission itself was meant to be a lever for policy change globally. And for those of you who know very much about international early child development work, you'll know that by and large, it's a pretty small community. Organization like UNICEF, which has, you know, literally dozens of people in certain branches, have 1.5 full-time equivalents working on early child development. The World Health Organization has half a full-time equivalent working on early child development. And UNESCO, so far as I can tell, has basically people who watch it out of the corner of their eye. So in terms of the international agencies, you know, in a planet with 6.5 billion people, we have 2.5 equivalents dealing with early child development, and then an intrepid group of a few dozen people around foundations like Aga Khan, Bernard Van Leer, the consultative group that pushed this agenda. And so the opportunity of the WHO Commission was a chance to raise a global intersectoral coalition in a way that, in many respects, early childhood is pushed by local intersectoral coalitions. And so we were honored that within the various global knowledge networks that were created around the social determinants of health, that early childhood was included within this. The task that we were given was to create a model of the social determinants of child development that would promote understanding, policy, and action around the globe. And so what we did was, is we read into the record this sort of thing, which I'm sure all of you know about, the issue of the dense network of sensitive periods in brain and biological development that occur early on in life, and the disproportionate opportunity there is then to provide environments that are stimulating, supportive, and nurturant one way or another in order to help kids develop the competencies they will need for success in school. And that goes everywhere from the visual system setting up in ways that they can decode the social information that exists in the human faces around. So whether or not kids will attend to the teacher or not is encoded early on. Whether or not kids get control of their impulses and are able to use verbal negotiation skills rather than physically aggressive responses in situations of social conflict. The opportunity to develop receptive and expressive language. The establishment within the prefrontal cortex of the ability to cope with focused attention tasks as opposed to being distractible and so forth, all of which emerge in the early years. Thereafter then, the birth cohort studies, one way or another, have showed that as you go throughout the life course, each of these sets of problems, starting in teenage, young and middle adulthood, middle-aged, and old age can be attributed then one way or another to the early years. So what we did was, is we started with the work of Yuri Bronfenbrenner, which was the ecological model of early childhood that was adapted basically for North American circumstances and tried to create a global version of this. And so we ended up beginning with, not surprisingly, the individual child and the fact that various windows of opportunity open and close at different points in development for the child. And then imagining the environments that the child is interacting with. So at the first level is some kind of family. And here at the global level, family is defined as the people that you eat with and sleep overnight with. So a family can be mom, dad, and the apple-faced children eating Wonder Bread. or it can be a group of AIDS orphans living under the same roof with a village grandmother, or a lot of different things in between. But that's the definition we've been working with here. Next out, we talked about the residential area. And I mean, this may sound very trivial, the term residential area versus neighborhood or community. But on the global scale, it became very clear from the work we were doing that you can't assume that a group of people living side by side are in any sense a neighborhood or community, that in many parts of the world, the people who are living side by side, let's say on the edge of Nairobi or something like that, come from various tribal groups who have decades and centuries long histories of conflict with one another. And so whether or not residential proximity equals neighborhood becomes the question, right? And one cannot assume that. If it does, then there are opportunities for growth and development. If it doesn't, then there are real problems there. The thing that we added that never existed in the Bronfenbrennerian kind of model at all was the non-geographic notion of a relational community. That is to say, the group from which you get your identity, right? And on the international scale and increasingly in the domestic scale, it becomes clear that the group from which you get your identity has an awful lot to do, for instance, with the expectation of gender, with the expectation of what a successful life looks like and a failed life, with whether or not children should be seen and not heard, or should be obedient, or whether or not they should be articulate and think for themselves, etc. So on a global scale, it's very, very difficult to think about the determinants of early childhood without dealing with ideas like relational communities. We also defined the service and program environment as a kind of a semi-geographic environment, but we distinguished it from the other pieces here to make the real point that early on in life, children are growing and developing according to the qualities of stimulation, support, and nurturance in their environments 24/7. So that early childhood is a subject akin to environmentalism, and that service provision is part of it, but that it is not just a question of programs and services, it is a question of environments, and that the programs and services are fish that swim in a sea of nurturant or not nurturant environments. We dealt with issues of regions, both in particularly in developing countries. The fact that many countries that look from the outside to be failed states, nonetheless quite often have within them regions where remarkable things are going on. And if anybody doubts that, I would suggest that you go to northern Pakistan, and sandwiched in between Kashmir on the east and that whole Peshawar Swat tribal zone on the west, there is the Karakoram zone going up into China, dominated by Ismaili community. Aga Khan Foundation has been in there, and the child development that is going on in that area is terrific. They've managed to reduce infant mortality by tenfold in about 5 years. They have established gender equity and access to education and all the rest of it. So within what is in effect a failed state, we have a thriving region, right? And so understanding that when we think internationally, to not stop at the state level and to look below that and to look for examples below that becomes very important. At the level of nation, there's obvious determinants about the socioeconomic conditions. But, you know, I think here, too, about the globalization of the economy and the kind of work that Jody has done a beautiful job of, showing that what we see as work-life, home-life conflict at our particular level of stress emerges in other parts of the world now as children being, you know, tied to their cribs or whatever while parents try to make a living on the one hand. So there is the challenges of the globalized economy on the one hand. On the other hand, there are institutions like the Convention on the Rights of the Child, and in particular on the General Comment number 7, which is the early child development rider to the convention, which is potentially a powerful tool to counter some of those things and to hold states' parties, as they like to say, accountable for children's development. And then on we go. I think that's enough for that for the moment. Anyway, The point is, though, that when you look at the state of child development using a population-based tool like the Early Development Indicator, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about it, what it does is it taps into physical, language and cognitive, social and emotional development, which are, if you're like me, you're a lumper rather than a splitter. You just sort of see the whole child early on in life as being composed of the physical domain, the social and emotional domain, and the language and cognitive domain. And because of the importance of early environments in children's development then, not surprisingly, what happens early on in life is we get a lot of avoidable inequalities in early child development across these domains. And because they are avoidable, they are not only inequalities, they are inequities, because we can do something about them. And so in Canada, you know, by the time children reach kindergarten age, we see a gradient, socioeconomic gradient, in the fraction of kids who are behind where we'd like them to be in one or more of those domains of their development. And what we see in Canada, we see in middle-income country like Jamaica, as you can see. We see in a war-torn area like Kosovo, and so forth. So the idea that around the world, regardless of whether or not you're in wealthy countries, developing countries, war-torn countries, what we see as a rule is gradients across the socioeconomic spectrum in children's development. So we're not talking about threshold processes. We're talking about processes that when you go from the least to the most privileged in society, you get a gradual decline in the fraction of vulnerable kids, meaning that vulnerability in development is an issue for everybody, just it's more acute in some areas than it is in others. The other thing that we have read into the record is that once the gradients establish themselves, A, they tend to track, and B, at least when you look at educational competency outcomes, the gradients tend to flatten up. And here I want to recognize Doug, you know, who I think has really done the best work on this. And given that I've only got two more minutes, I'm not going to spend any more time talking about it. I will say, however, that the implications of the gradient mean that there is no simple targetable group by geography, SES, ethnicity, biology that contains most of the vulnerability. Any favorite group you want might be high within itself but represents a minority of the population. So that the real improvement means lowering and flattening gradients, which means creating de facto universal access to the environments and experiences that can support early childhood. We understand that we can do a much better job, yeah, depending which variable, it's either flattening up or flattening down, but you get my point. That we understand that at the margin, given the way we are already investing in school and other things, that marginal dollars will probably produce the best gains in human development if they are invested early. And in fact, people like Heckman have done a fairly good job of demonstrating that, building up on the follow-up studies that we have available to ourselves. And lo and behold, certain countries like Sweden actually honor that. Sweden actually does spend more during sensitive periods in brain development than they do later on, whereas in Canada and the United States, the spending curves are inverted. And so it could come as no surprise that countries like that do tend to produce better developmental outcomes than we do. Anyway, what we ended up saying to the commission was a bunch of things, but here are four overarching messages that we put forward, that parents and families want to do best for their children but need help from society at all levels, right? So we have to have partnerships. The old Anglophone model that the state is only interested in children when the family has collapsed needs to be abandoned for a more communitarian model. Because of sensitive periods in brain development, early environments are the most powerful determinant of basic competencies. That early physical, social, emotional, language development goes on to influence these things across the life course. And that inequities in ECD have the capacity to threaten the level of competency needed for societal survival. And all we need to do for ourselves is think, what do we do now with a bunch of, let's say, auto workers with level one and level two literacy and numeracy skills when metal on metal banging occupations disappear, to realize that it's true in a lot of different places. So in the end, the equity from the start chapter in this, I think, reflected our white quite well. And had a number of recommendations, of which committing to and implementing a comprehensive approach to early life, extending interventions in early life to encourage social, emotional, language, and cognitive development is the overarching theme that they've put out there. So I would like for people around this room to be thinking that perhaps, you know, the intersectoral coalition for the early years may be strengthened. And with that, a lot of the issues that you guys face dealing in the school years might be improved. Final point I just want to make here is that we have now created a global monitoring protocol for how to monitor the rights in early childhood rider to the Convention on the Rights of the Child. We've produced an indicator set under kind of license to the monitoring committee in Geneva. We've created a kind of an implementation protocol package, and we're going to start piloting it over the next year. And we're hoping then that as the various countries troop to Geneva every 5 years to report on what they're doing on the rights of the child then, that there's going to be a lot more and a lot more valid reporting on what they are doing in the early years. And with that, a strengthening potentially of the commitment to education for all, among other things. And with that, I'll stop talking. Thanks for listening.